iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patty and we're joined today by the expert Bhupinder Anand, who is the MD of Anand Financial Architecture. IFA is based in Uxbridge, alongside Anand Wills and Trusts. He connects law, tax and financial planning to provide a holistic one-stop estate planning service. Now, one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is investing in investing your money. In our previous session that we had, we were talking about investing your money and why leaving money in a bank is not a safe investment. So we move on from that, and today we talk about investing your money in different ways. Bhupinder, once again, a very warm welcome to you and thank you for joining us.
Great to see you again, Tony. It's always fun to do these sessions and hopefully help a few people.
So let's talk about investing your money. In our previous session, we talked about why do we need to look at stock markets, the risks and unit trusts, and why leaving money in a bank is not really a safe investment in the long run. So today I'd like to elaborate on that and perhaps go into part two of our discussion and talk about investing your money.
Yeah, we covered a few bases last time, like particularly talking about risk. You know, this word risk, for a lot of people, they think it's the risk of losing money completely, as opposed to the word risk when it comes to investments is really what we call volatility risk.
Yeah.
How far down could funds go before you panic? Because they will always come back up. And so the idea was that if you buy a single share, you're at risk, massive risk, because that single share could fall. But if you go into a fund, and we'll talk a bit more about that, Tony, then that risk is what we call diversified, because you may hold 100, you may hold 1,000 different companies.
I see.
We'll talk about how.
Yeah.
So that if one failed, you wouldn't really notice it, because the rest should outweigh that.
Yeah.
So having covered risk, we really got to get down to the nitty gritty. What next?
And so when we talk about next, we need to perhaps talk about trusts and funds and how we're going to be using our money to our advantage in the long run. So can we delve into something what I have done very little research in and know very little about, and that is unit trusts?
Well, I'm going to go back. So forgive me to those that are watching or listening to this that are familiar with this world already.
Yeah.
But let's just make sure that if we cover the basis from the beginning, then we're on the same page with everybody. So the first thing is, when we're looking to invest, we want to diversify, both globally, meaning do we want all our money in the UK? Do we want some investments in America, Japan, Europe, et cetera, et cetera? Do we want to be focused only on what we call the blue chip companies, you know, the biggest companies in the world? Or are we willing to accept more volatility with smaller businesses that could then turn out to be a new Tesla in the future? Who knows? So this is what we call by diversification of both globally and asset classes, you know, technology, consumer goods. These are all different classes, and they don't all necessarily work in the same direction.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a word that I'm going to bring up, is we're looking for what's called non-correlated investments. The opposite of that is correlated investments. Correlated means if one goes up, the other one goes up too.
Yep.
Because it's of a similar nature. What we're looking for is through diversification is non-correlated investments, so that if one goes down, but another one goes up, hopefully the one going up is more than the one going down, so we're generally moving up.
Yeah.
So how do we obtain that spread, that asset allocation is what we call it, of global diversification, of sector diversification, is by using something called a unit trust. So what a unit trust is doing is saying, we're giving our money to a fund manager. The fund manager has greater expertise than the investor or me or you.
Yes.
And they are able to go and interview the actual managers, directors of these companies, They're looking for trends in the marketplace. They're reading accounts. They're looking to see what share prices are likely to do in the future.
Okay.
That unit trust manager may be managing hundreds, if not thousands, of companies. And some of these funds are massive. They're in the hundreds of millions, if not billions, of pounds that they're managing.
Wow. That's a huge portfolio.
So this guy's expertise is huge.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is handing over our monies to these unit trust managers who are now going to diversify for us. So those unit trust managers typically may have an expertise in a particular sector. So a UK manager knows about UK stocks, probably knows nothing about Japan, and vice versa. So a good portfolio, now we're using another word, what's a portfolio? Mm. A portfolio is a collection of unit trusts.
Okay.
So what we now do for our clients is that we would take it step by step. So how do you invest money step by step? First of all, what's your attitude to investment risk? How cautious are you? How speculative are you willing to be? We would put our clients on a 1 to 10 scale where 1 is keeping money under the bank and 10 is taking it to the casino.
Mm. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Mm. Yeah. And we use a very sophisticated piece of software to identify where on that scale you might be. Mm. Let's say you're a 6, which means I'm willing to accept some downside in the short term, but looking for growth in the long term. That number 6 will drive what we call the asset allocation. It's like a pie chart of how much is in the UK, how much is in America, etc. From the pie chart, we'll then identify the fund managers, the unit trust, that represent that. So, for example, today, we might have a third, roughly, of your pie chart in the UK.
Yep.
But within that, we'll be holding, say, 5 different unit trusts, all covering different sectors of the UK. So a typical portfolio for us is holding about 25 different unit trusts in one go.
Okay.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iGlobalNews.com. So, looking at the buoyancy of these trusts and tracking those funds, clearly you've explained where the advisor comes in. And the beneficiaries, or the benefits, are actually having an advisor to look after those trusts for you. But when it comes to how much we should be saving and the quantity, where do we stand with that, Bhupinder?
That's a simple answer, but one that is going to be focused on an individual. So the first thing to say is as much as you can, as soon as you can.
Okay.
Let's clarify that a bit more. You see, when people defer their savings, whether that's for future use, like maybe for a new car or a wedding or whatever it might be, or even up to their retirement, what you've got to understand is if we were putting that over a chart and we were starting here today and this is our end date, whatever I put in at the beginning is the one that's going to grow for the longest period of time.
Okay.
Time is our friend. And time, using the power of compound interest. So compound interest means if I make 10% in year one, in year two, I make 10% again. It doesn't mean my 100's gone from 110 to 120. Mm. I've actually gone to 121. Because the second year, I'd made 10% on my 110. The power of compound interest over time.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Is extremely powerful. Mm. And so starting sooner means that you're getting the longest opportunity for growing that money. Frankly, what are you putting in the last few years of your investment period isn't getting the chance to grow very much. Okay. So starting early makes a profound, massive difference to what your target might be. I would normally advocate, obviously everyone is different, but at least 10% of your net income should be going towards medium to long-term savings to have a meaningful impact at the other end. If you want to wait a year or 2 years or 5 years to start, then you are just not going to accumulate as much at the other end, because it's that first year, 5 years, that is going to grow for the longest period. So simple answer, Tony. As to numbers, really it's going to be down to individuals. And what I do for my clients is help them to target a particular sum. So if somebody says, I need some money for future school fees, perhaps, or university fees, or to pay for my children's weddings,
yep,
or to buy my yacht, or for my future retirement, we would look, take a number today and said, okay, what kind of number would it look like if you needed to spend it today? Now let's project that forward with inflation and say, what number will that be in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years time? Okay, clearly a bigger number because of inflation. Then we'll work backwards and say, okay, what have I got to put away on a monthly basis to accumulate that amount? So it's not too complicated, but a little bit scientific.
But it sounds good, but it's relative, isn't it? It's relative to what we can actually afford.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't afford it, then no one's going to say do that and not feed yourself. But the principle is start early, start as much as you can, as soon as you can.
But then with that, the one thing that comes to my mind when you're saying that start early, save as much as you can, we've recently been accustomed to hearing about ISAs. Where do they come in on the equation?
Yeah, ISAs, individual savings accounts. ISAs is another ISAs, way of saying them. So I described what a unit trust is earlier on. The problem with any kind of savings is tax. And so if you leave money in a bank and it earns interest, you pay tax on that interest. Now, if you earn interest in a bank, you're very lucky right now, because most banks aren't really paying anything.
No.
If you invest in unit trusts, then any growth you make, so let's say you invested £1,000 and you cashed in and it was £3,000, that profit of £2,000 is ordinarily taxable as capital gains, yep, not income.
Okay.
Capital gains tax is not for today, but essentially is related to your level of income as to what the tax rate might be. What an ISA does is give you that same unit trust, but with a protective umbrella over the top that says any profits are completely free of tax.
Okay.
So you don't even need to declare the profits you make. Now, the most you can put into an ISA because of that tax efficiency, there's a limit, but it's a generous limit, is £20,000 per person. So between a couple...
Over what period of time, Bipinda?
Per tax year.
Okay.
Sorry, great question. Yeah.
Yeah.
So £20,000 per tax year per couple, per person. So for a couple, that's £40,000 a year. Now, even if you could afford to do that, a lot of people in the past used to say to me, oh, I can't be bothered to do an ISA. Well, here's the point, really. People that did bother 10 years ago, 15 years ago doing this, have now got funds that are worth hundreds of thousands of pounds, maybe £500,000, tax-free.
Wow.
So now they're making profits on that and not needing to declare it. So don't just look at what your 20,000 is today. Just imagine what it might become. ISAs are very powerful. There are also other versions of ISAs. For example, for a child under the age of 18, you can have a junior ISA. That allows the parent to put £9,000 a year aside for the child to grow tax-free.
Okay.
Where the child becomes entitled at 18. You can't stop them having the money, presuming they know about it. There are other types of ISAs, like a help to buy ISA, where the government will contribute some money towards your fund if you're going to use it as a deposit on a property. So talk to a good advisor to look at the different variations of what you could do.
Thank you for explaining that. So
it's also just worth mentioning on ISAs very quickly, Tony, that if you're with an ISA provider and you're not happy with them, you don't have to stay with them. You can move your ISA across.
Oh, I see.
And you don't actually cash it in as such. You go to a new provider and say, I would prefer to be with you. And that advisor takes that ISA over, so you don't lose your ISA status.
Very useful to know. Very useful, very important information.
Log on to iglobalnews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iglobalnews.com. We are talking with Bhupinder Anand, who is the MD of Anand Financial Architecture, and today we are talking about investing your money in great ways where you can accumulate and rather than speculate, as it may be. So we've talked about investing and using an advisor. We've just been explained what ISAs are all about. Let's talk about the actual products themselves and structuring the product, Bhupinder, if we may, and get some insight from you about products, the products which are available to us as an investor.
Right. So structured products is something that very, very few people are aware of. You will not see this in the weekend finance pages. As an advisor that's been using these for the last 20 years, I absolutely love them.
Okay.
So I'm going to share some things here that most people have never heard of, Tony.
Go on.
So what a structured product does, It gives you a participation in stock markets, but takes risk off the table. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
So I might buy into the FTSE 100 index. So the FTSE 100 index moves up and down and is a measure of the UK's biggest 100 companies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people, when they're watching the news, will, towards the end of the news, say, hear the news that FTSE went up today X points or crashed down X points. It never stays down. It comes back up. What a structured product does is that you go in for an investment term of which could be 6, 7, perhaps even up to 8 years. Note the word up to, because you may mature early.
Okay.
And when you go in, you look at where FTSE is on the day of investment. So let's say it's 7,000 as an index number. Every anniversary, you take another look at what FTSE is. As long as FTSE is not down, you get kicked out. Now, in this terminology, kick out is a good phrase.
Okay.
Kick out means
I was going to matures. Ask. Yes, I was going to ask, actually. Yes, it sounds quite
obvious. It's called a kick out plan, which is not you're booted off some way, but the plan kicks out. It matures.
Okay.
And it gives you a fixed return. Currently, we're getting around 7.5%, even if FTSE doesn't move at all. Now, if FTSE is lower at the anniversary, and by the way, it doesn't matter what happens in between over that 1 year, it's anniversary date alone.
Yep.
If it's lower, nothing happens. You just stay invested. You then look at it again at the second anniversary, and if FTSE is at least where we started from, again, doesn't matter what happened in between, you get two times the 7.5%. You make 15%.
Interesting. Okay.
So in theory, as long as FTSE is lower at anniversary, and bizarrely, you want FTSE to go down, so that you accumulate these 7.5s. So if you are in for, say, 5 years, you're going to get a return of 37.5%, even if FTSE hasn't moved.
That's an attractive return.
It is very attractive. There are capital guaranteed versions of those, which could be you just get your money back. Because if FTSE is still down at the maturity date, which could be 7 years from the start, and FTSE every anniversary was lower and still was at the end date, you never had a kick out. There are versions where you could get your capital back, but if you want an even higher return, you might accept some capital loss if FTSE is down really badly, like 40%. At maturity, which is unlikely.
And is this something
that's a lot for anyone to take in?
Yes, it is. It is. It's fantastic. But is this something you've set in place from the offset, from when you actually go down the route of that investment?
Or is it something you can... has to be a start date.
Okay.
So what we do is the managers that run these accumulate the money, fix a start date,
and that
one's closed. And then a new one will come along, but we don't know what the rates of the new one will be until it's come along. Give you some flavour. About 2 years ago, we were getting an annual return of 12.5% on these things.
Okay. as opposed to 7.5%.
As opposed to kind of 7.5 now, it did dip to about 6%.
Yep.
It seemed to be coming back up again. It's a very clever investment. You won't see this advertised. It's secure. It's run by the likes of Barclays Bank, HSBC. Right. They're supporting and backing it. And I mean, that's a risk. If HSBC went bust, you could lose your money. Mm. I think that's an acceptable risk for most people. So I don't want to focus too much on that, but I just want to say to people that are watching or listening to this, there's a lot more in the marketplace that you may never have heard about.
Indeed.
Talk to a good independent financial advisor that can introduce this stuff to you.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
So when we talk about tax on our investments and our savings, which is something you've mentioned a few times in our conversation today already, mm-hmm. Bhupinder, how can we actually go about saving tax on our investments? Because one way or the other, we're still going to pay tax on the money that we get. So how do we go about saving that?
Fantastic, because I see this on a daily basis where people come to me and have accumulated portfolios outside their ISA, because we know ISAs are tax-free. But they may have other portfolio of investments that are not inside the ISA. We have already said any profits when you cash in is taxed at capital gains. But here's the thing. We each also have an allowance for capital gains tax of £12,300.
Right.
That means if I cash in and make a profit of no more than, call it 12,000 for round numbers, I pay no tax. If you let your portfolio grow over a long period of time and you don't do anything about it, the problem is your profits may be more than 12,000 and therefore you suffer tax. So what I do for my clients is an exercise called bed and breakfast. Okay. Nothing to do with a hotel, but it's bed and breakfast, which means
all right.
let's take some simple numbers.
Okay,
I've invested 100,000 just because it's a round number. And it's grown to 110,000. I deliberately in March of the tax year would cash that in because I then what's called crystallize a gain of 10,000. I've got an allowance of 12, therefore I pay no tax.
Okay.
And then I buy back in again the same investment for 110,000. Now there has to be a 30-day gap for me to buy in, or I buy something else, which I don't have to wait time.
Yep.
But when I buy in, I'm buying at 110,000, which means my gain next year is measured from 110. So now if I've gone to 120 the next year, I can do it again. Whereas if I hadn't done it the first year and cashed in, I would have had 20,000 of profit with an allowance of only 12 and paid tax on 8. So this bed and breakfast exercise is an annual thing to do. And a decent advisor should be doing it for you without you even asking, which is what we do for our clients.
There are substantial savings to be made when it comes to this. And I'm really surprised that this kind of figures that you talk about are quite surprisingly good, actually.
Well, between a couple, Tony, if that capital gains tax allowance is £25,000 a year nearly.
Correct, yes.
Of tax-free profit.
That's a substantial
amount. How would you not take advantage of that?
That's a substantial amount, yes.
Thank you for listening to iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com.
Bhupinder Anand, you are the MD of Anand Financial Architecture, and we talk about investing today and making sure that our investments are done in the proper way, given the proper advisors and the right channels. So people want to find out more about what we've spoken about today and also in our series. How can they go about getting in touch with you, and what's the call to action?
Thanks, Tony. Well, I'm an independent financial advisor. I'm based in Uxbridge in West London. Having said that, I deal with most of my clients through Zoom, so it doesn't matter where you are, we can talk. If you want to contact me, I am on my phone number 01895 457 440. That's 01895 457 440, or drop me an email. My first name Bhupinder, Bhupinder, at Anand, Anand, Associates, plural, .com. bhupendra@andassociates.com. I'd love to hear from you and also show you what we do when we do run these portfolios for our clients, and we report back to you every 3 months to tell you how it's doing and any changes we want to make. Investments can be fun.
Please note, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance. All investments can fall as well as rise in value, and you can lose some or all of your money. Additionally, this podcast does not constitute an investment recommendation.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.